Now, capital and labor is a topic of our discussion this evening. Now, the terminologies capital and labor is used in modern economics. And it's quite familiar to people in general who are not economists. We are not economists, but we are very acquainted with this. These terms, capital and labor. Now, why did we select this subject for this evening's talk? Are we going to discuss economics, or are we going to discuss one or the other aspect of economic theory? No. We will not be discussing modern economic theories, but we will be deliberating on a part of the economic theory and practice, which the terms capital and labor indicate, but in the light of theosophy. You may ask, what has theosophy to do with economics and economic theories and practices? Or anyone or several aspects of the theory and practice of economics, what has theosophy to do with it? Now, this question is answered by a counter question. What is it, or what can be outside the purview of spiritual knowledge? Theosophy is divine wisdom, an all-inclusive, all-comprehensive wisdom science. We have been studying theosophy and studying the secret doctrine on Sunday mornings. Those students who are regular would have already got an inkling how all-embracing philosophy is, wisdom science. There is a verse in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It says, every act without exception is comprehended in spiritual knowledge. Now, let's try to understand this profound statement. Now, HBB says in their article, is theosophy religion? In that article, she makes a statement which we all understand, students of theosophy, because having studied theosophy for so long, which analyze all religions and perfectly scientific religion and religious science. In this article, she says, practical theosophy. Theosophy is not mere a metaphysical dissertation. It is practical. So practical theosophy is not one science. It embraces every science in life, moral as well as physical. And she goes on to show that it is a universal coach, a tutor of worldwide knowledge and experience. And it fits its students for the highest service of humanity. Now, let's understand this still better by considering what Mr. Judd says. He says the same thing in a different way. It is letters that have helped me. He says, all true things must be total. Totality. And totalities exist at once. And all partial things and partial forms exist in those that are total. Now, those that are total reveal the entire truth. Those that are partial, those that are that partake of our lower nature, reveal only partial truths. So, when we consider any subject, our view of life and nature, from our limited perspective of personality, is a partial truth. A partial truth out of the context of the totality can only be partially true and partake of error. So all partial truths are invariably rooted in error. If these are to be made perfect, they have to be considered and remodeled in the light of the totality of knowledge. Now, economic theories, economic practices that that all the nations today follow, they are all formulations of the lower personal self, intellect, and the light of your Christ principle or higher divine self is absent. It is only the higher egoic perception gives you the totality, the view of the total, the view of the entire truth. So our lower intellect, not illuminated by the light of the higher self, invariably be partial, only a segment. So it naturally will be out of harmony with all. Now let's again take another example to illustrate this point. Take a circle or a sphere, if you like. Now, the circumference of the circle or the sphere represents the limitation of our mental, lower mental view, because standing in space, you look all around, below, above, left, right, in every direction. Your mind can reach up to a certain point, and then your mental construct of what you see is only a sphere. But space is even beyond that. So circle represents the totality. Circle is a representation of perfection and totality and unity of all. Now, you take a small segment of a circle, a half a centimeter or 1 centimeter segment of a circle. That segment of a circle is a part of the circle, that is part of totality. But is it the circle itself? No, it is not the circle itself. Now, if you take only one particular segment of the circle and not view the whole circle at all, you mistake that segment to be the all. So from the limited perspective, it may be right, but it is not true, it is not real. So as you traverse from the segment at the periphery of the circle and traverse along the radiating lines towards the center of the circle, as you recede from the circumference and proceed towards the center, as you recede more and more, the segment also enlarges. When you reach half the distance, it would have covered half the circle. When you reached the complete center, you would have comprehended the whole of the circle, of the whole of the sphere. And from that whole of the perception of the whole, and every particular also is comprehended in it. Innumerable segments, however tiny, however large, are comprehended. There's the meaning of Bhagavad Gita says, every action without exception is comprehended in spiritual knowledge. Now we have to consider this part of the economic theory from the context of the whole, right? Now what is economics? Economics is it is an etymology of economics is eco means home, And nomos means accounts. Right? Now, economic is a social science. It's theories and practice. So, not only economics, take any branch of science, sociology, any branch of science, cosmology, physics, or whatever, biology or physiology, whatever. Every branch of science is only a segment. For instance, Darwin's evolutionary theory. It's only a segment of the total evolutionary law. Total evolutionary law comprehends spiritual, intellectual, physical of cosmos as a whole and the macrocosmos man and that interrelationship. Comprehends the total. What Darwin does is he takes only a physical world or a material world and nature, make observations and make theories on evolution, which constitute only a segment of the circle. His theory is right in one sense, that is, evolution itself is true. But many conclusions they draw, conclusions that scientists draw from that theory, not entirely true, because it is only a partial view. So this vision, now, in order to comprehend the totality of the science of evolution, one has to have a knowledge or vision of the totality, total self, and also comprehend the grand purpose of existence. Then what happens is every particular will fall in its right and correct place in the whole scheme of things and will be in perfect harmonious relationship with all and all tending in one grand cosmic purpose. So this is the meaning of every action without exception is comprehended in spiritual knowledge. So we have to consider this modern economic theory, capital, labor, and all, every issue that you have in human relationships, in society, in international relationship, has to be studied in the light of total knowledge, divine wisdom, or theosophy. Now, economic theory, economics. Economics is home. Eco means home. Nomos means accounts. Now, how to keep the family accounts? Now, we all know, you know, as a family consists of elders, the parents, the young people, the infants, growing children, some are in a higher educational stage, some are just about to go into employment, old people are there to be taken care of. The family consists of so many individuals, and every individual has his or her needs and wants. The comfort of home, clothing, food, and many other things like clean drinking water and proper homely atmosphere, convivial relationships for the emotional and mental well-being and health of each young request to be taken care of, their education to be provided, and then you have to generate income. With the income that you generate, you have to provide, allocate the resources for the various needs of each individual member of the family. This is called economics, home management. Now, it is also a social science. A society or a nation is also a family. Family of the citizens who constitute the nation. So, economics is a social science which is directed at the satisfaction of the needs and wants through the allocation of various resources which have alternative use, allocate the resources to the needs and wants of various segments of population, various classes of people, various ethnic groups, various religious groups, and so on and so forth. So therefore, economics is not something new at all. It is as old as man, though in older times, economic practices were there. We didn't use these terminologies. Now, two chief motivations in human life, what are they? Needs and wants. Needs are, necessities of life, basic necessities for survival, food, drinking water, housing, requires to be clothed, basic employment, and then more than all, nutrition. In India, millions of children are suffering from nutrition. So there is something wrong with our economics, management of the family, of the nation, nutrition, and education. And then not only the intellectual development of aesthetic sense, health. These are all basic necessities that we provided for. So the ruler of the state has to look into all this. Also defense, protection, law and order, and so on and so forth. These are basic necessities and essentials. And there are also wants. Wants are things we wish to have, which add to our comfort, something more than the needs, right? We desire luxuries. And like to have, a fabulous car and so on and so forth. They're luxuries. So they're inessential. But then human nature, karma, is there to be satisfied. So they also have to be satisfied. So the state has to produce wealth and create opportunities and use the wealth that you create to provide for equitable distribution to meet the needs and wants of all the citizens. That is the whole science of economics, the whole purpose of economics. Now, going to the economic theory, there are factors of production because you have to produce wealth. Modern or ancient, there are four pillars of production, economic production. It is said land, labor, capital, and entrepreneurship. Right? Land means soil, whatever land contains, the soil, the mineral, the water, forests, the plants, oceans. These are all wealth, natural wealth. So they are the basic material for use of man. But they have to be, these, what they call as resources, have to be converted, harvested, converted, transformed. You require labor. You require skilled labor and also require unskilled labor. Without labor, the resources cannot be fashioned into the necessities of goods and services. And then land, labor. Now, capital. Capital is also necessary. What is capital? It is a means of converting the raw material into the finished goods and services. Machinery. It may be very simple machinery. It may be, on a mass production, a large factory like a clock mill, steel mill, and so on and so forth. And then entrepreneurship, capitalist. We may have labor, we may have land, right? And if the entrepreneurship is not there, capital is not there, who knows by his innate talent how to create this capital, how to convert the natural resources to finished products, and how to organize and employ skilled and unskilled labor for this purpose of production of goods and services. So without entrepreneurship, nothing can be achieved. So these four pillars of modern economics is very important. The land, all the resources that land contains, the labor, the capital, and the entrepreneurship. So entrepreneur has the skill, has a business acumen, he has the organizing ability. He puts the above, that is the three, land, labor, and capital, to optimal productive use, and he creates wealth. Take any activity for that matter, even agriculture. Okay. So the farmer needs the land, the soil, the plant, the seeds, the cattle, and various other means of agricultural production. It may be industrial production. You have to maybe invent or buy or install machinery, or it may be very simple cottage industries where you weave handlooms, you require shuttle and various other devices, and you require raw material for that. So capital would be necessary, and also you require services, there is educational institutions to train and produce generate skilled labor. And you have to have healthcare services, and all this adds to the national wealth, and employment is generated. So, and also you need travel, transport, communication. So by development of these, you create national wealth, generate employment, and meet the needs and wants of various segments of society. And what comes out of all this is, what is very significant is, all these are very interdependent. All these factors are interdependent. Now, take capital and labor. The labor does his work and gets his wages. And the entrepreneur, the capitalist, with his business acumen and his organizing ability and vision, he's able to transform the basic material into usable products, which meets the needs and wants of services. And the wage of the capitalist is his profit. So, you see, this is true in every undertaking, whether small or great, whether it is home or a nation or an international community. So in every undertaking, large or small, running a household or running a small business like a pawn shop or a tea shop, or even individual goal you set up for yourself, well, I'm going to achieve such and such a thing, attain such and such a skill, I will acquire musical talent or pursue such and such a skill. So you have to put in your own labor, You have to generate your own capital. You yourself is the entrepreneur, and then your wage will be what you achieve. So you see, these factors of production is there in every aspect of life. So the context, now coming to the context of the large scale industrial production. Now this has come into existence of large scale industrial capital intensive production through mechanization came into existence in towards the beginning of the 19th century, end of 18th century. Before that, whole of the Western and everywhere, the means of production was in the hands of skilled labor. There were entrepreneurs. They always employed skilled labor. It was decentralized. And there were numerous people working on various things to produce variety of products and services. So the diffused activity of economic production. And this the education of the skilled labor was through apprenticeship. So what they produced through such artistic skills, now with the advent of industrial civilization, all those artistic skills and also the integral human development that takes place through pursuit of this artistic skill in decentralized production, all that is now, you will notice, has been destroyed in the large scale industrial production. This is what happened in I think towards the beginning of the 19th century, or towards the end of, there was a huge a cloth mill was started in England, and the decentralized economic production in the hands of thousands and thousands of skilled workers and small entrepreneurs was totally destroyed. They were all thrown out of employment, and there was a great revolution, and the laborers were forcefully employed to work in factories under inhuman conditions, and there was a great unrest. The laborers rose and attacked and destroyed the mills, and the police and the military were called, and then the rebellion was quelled, and hundreds of people were shot dead. Mark this, what happened. So it was a terrible transformation from agrarian society to industrialized society. So in 1886, in Chicago, they called Haymarket Square in Chicago, there was a peaceful rally of workers who were demanding that they must be allowed to work only 8 hours a day, and they were not paid well, and they had to work in inhuman conditions. They made demands, and a riot broke out, and police killed and injured workers, and many were executed. Look at this, what modern economic system, mass production, did. So this is called in American history as the Great Upheaval, and in England as Luddite movement. So from that day, from the, you know, the Haymarket affair, as it called, Haymarket riot, that took place in 1889, that day was marked as May Day. marked as Bay Day. So every year, the international community observes Bay Day. And mind you, this kind of an anguish and anger and exploited labor is not died out. You know what happened in Germany and France yesterday? You heard the news? There was riots. There is some dissatisfaction, vengeance, anger, simmering discontent among the labor class. And they observe the May Day in Germany and France, invariably with violence. Now, all this is to be noted. When you consider only a segment and take that as the whole and build your whole system, this is what happens. And again, May Day is not something new. In the ancient world, this was observed, but in a very compassionate way. In Roman times, they used to have an annual celebration called Saturnalia. Saturnalia, maybe Saturn here, yeah, very important. They made sacrifices in the temples of Saturn. And there used to be a public banquet, partying, gambling, gift giving. And the masters served the labor. And they entertain the labor. And, the time of liberty and labor and the masters mingled together and danced and so on. Similarly, the Greek holiday of Kronia, Kronos. Now, mind you, again, Saturnalia comes from Saturn. Kronos is Saturn. In Greece also, it used to be observed in August. He used to feast, there used to be banquets, everyone waited upon their servants, and there was a liberation of the labor class, laboring people from their hard labor. And slaves were set free, and rich and poor dined together, and they played games. Mind you, they all remembered, recalled the mythical golden age when the king Saturn ruled them. So it remains fresh in the memory of the ancient world. So this, by the way, as a small regression, I mentioned this. So we see here, so now, in the context of large-scale industrial production, the prominent feature of the industrial civilization, cloth mill, steel mill, or whatever, large-scale production, the various industrial products, even agriculture, horticulture, estate management, huge coffee estates, tea estates owned by corporates, right? These are all economic activities, and there is the conflict of labor and the capital here. A long history of conflict, and even today is not died out. It is very much rampant, and there is trafficking, and ill-treatment of labor, and migrations of labor. We have seen what great pain the migrant labor suffer, and the problems of labor hazardous, working in coal mills or working in mines, and working in harvesting of or excavation of radioactive material. They're exposed to health hazards and Bhopal gas tragedy. So labor has problems. Hazardous. They have to meet with hazards. They have to work overtime, and they have to work in dehumanizing conditions, repetitive mechanical work, which dehumanizes the person. So, and often their wages are incommensurate with the work they have to turn out, and they are abused. And there are excellent entrepreneurs also at the same time who are aware of this and who take care of the labor interest that's also there. Now, for instance, there is an excellent practical work done by our great elder brother and a great student teacher, P.P. Wadia, right? He was a witness to, during the colonial times, the inhuman conditions and inhuman conditions under which the workers had to work in cloth mills in Madras, Bombay, and cloth mills were all run by rich Western capitalists, and they used to be abused, and no one to plead and safeguard the interests of the labor. Wadia ji took initiative to educate the laborers. He would organize meetings of the laborers, and he would begin the meetings with a reading from the Bhagavad Gita, infused dignity into their life, and then took up their abuses and injustice, made representation to the management, and saw to it the justice was given to them. So this is a kind of great humanitarian, theosophical work that PPW did. But today, what about the labor unions today? They become another, in the name of championing the cause of labor, they become exploiters of labor. You see how limited view of life gives rise to host of problems. So now, let's take Gandhiji's experience. Gandhiji had a very practical experience in South Africa and obtained through his experience deep insights and wisdom. So there's not much time. We will just briefly touch upon his wisdom and insights he shared in his writings. He points out that obvious point. Labor and capital are mutually interdependent. They are mutually under obligation. They are under mutual obligation to each other. And capital and labor is one family. They supplement and help each other. And they are required to work in unity and harmony. It depends on the enlightenment of the capitalist and the education of the laborer. So, laborer taking to violence and destroying the capitalist, like we have seen in the Industrial Revolution that often takes place, destruction of capitalists is destruction of labor also, because this is observation. So, how to deal with exploitation of labor? Not by destruction. You must employ non-violent, non-cooperation movement. That's one. If any injustice is done, non-cooperation with the management and non-violent putting forth of grievances and getting redressal. And more than all, education of the laborer, like Sri B.P. Wadia used to do. So, capitalism is not evil, but the wrong use, a wrong attitude, a wrong approach of the capitalist is evil. So, if capitalist or entrepreneur would discharge its full obligation towards the labor and take care of their basic interests and needs and well-being, health, education, all around, and decent and proper commensurate wages and effective means of redressal of grievances, which never would ever rise against the capitalist. So obligation of the labor, on the other hand, is never cause damage or loss to the master. So labor has to be united, Gandhiji says, and he has to make sacrifice and always employ non-violent means. And another interesting statement he makes, look, capitalist has to depend upon labor and to woo them. But labor is free of capital. If he has developed his skill and education, he can work and generate his own wages. He can live by himself. The labor can survive without capital, but capital cannot work without labor. The mistake of the labor is this: jealousy, envy, and try to seize power and become a capitalist in turn by himself. Now, this is the problem with labor, right? So he must recognize his dignity. Labor must build up his capital. What is the capital of the labor? His skill. By skill, we can earn without capital. And a number of skills, the more number of skills a worker develops, and if he educates himself and develops intelligence, he will have a sense of obligation by the capitalist. And capitalists in his turn have a sense of deep obligation and duty to the labor, and the harmonious relationship of mutual benefit will prevail. So they respect and appreciate each other. So therefore, organized enlightened labor is the best safeguard for the laborer. So the point that Gandhiji makes is the capital is not owned by capitalists alone. The capital ownership of the capital is of both the capitalist and the laborer. He says, mill hand had to realize they are also the mill owners. Capitalists should understand mill hand as much a proprietor of the mill as shareholders are. So the conflict of interest between capital and labor can be resolved by doing respective duties, dharma. This is the most important thing, respective duties. Duty is what is due to others. Now, if you understand in the light of wisdom science called theosophy, what true duty of human being is, there lies the true solution to the problem of capital labor. And Gandhiji's, when we understand this, the science of duty, right? Every right flows from duty well performed. And duty is what is due to others, due to our true self, due to our true self. So this is the right approach. And what Mr. Judge says, the article on religions and reform. No reform can ever take place as long as we don't have acquired wisdom science. The two great laws promulgated by theosophy for the reform of all social questions, international relations, karma and reincarnation. And every human being is a copy of the macrocosmos. And we are all interconnected, interdependent. So no man is a unit separate from others in the universe. And with this awakening, high and the low, the leader and the led, the ruler and the ruled, realize this, must think and act in such ways that no discord is produced by anyone in the great universal stream of evolution. It is a disturbance of this harmony which comes from considering only a segment. Invariably, disturbance of the harmony comes. So it is a disturbance of this harmony which alone brings miseries of life. Right? And we must understand, as we act in our life towards others, we'll be acted upon in a similar manner in some other time and some other point of time by others. If you do injustice, you will suffer injustice at the hands of others at one time or the other. So responsibility. So if this is known, then the entrepreneur, the one who is endowed with the wherewithal, he would know that he is only a trustee of the wealth, and he will use it for the good of his fellow men, and especially the good of the people who work under him and with him. And on the other hand, the poor will understand that their lot is due to their karma, as Bhagavad Gita reading shows. And it is the just effect of prior acts, and he being helped physically and intellectually and also morally by more fortunate sections would work out the old bad karma and sow seeds for the good and harmonious life in the future. So the ruling and the richer classes, if they believe in karma and reincarnation, a universal effort would be made by people who have the wherewithal for alleviation of the miserable conditions of the less fortunate sections of society, and educate them to consider themselves being helped. Right. So if they understand that they are given not only physical assistance, but also they are furnished with intelligent explanation of the apparent injustice of life, which only theosophy can teach, then the whole, the whole of society, the whole of national, social, economic, political system will undergo a transformation, and they would then be a collective effort to regulate our laws in accordance with the cosmic harmonious laws of life. So what Judge says is, without such theosophic philosophy and religion, the constantly increasing concessions made to labor, made to the clamor and uneducated democracy's demand, will only end in inflating actual majority with an undue sense of their real power and precipitate convulsions, which we are witnessing today. I think we have to stop here. And if there are any remarks that any one of you have to make, you are welcome.